I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for murders that defy explanation, mystery seeking exploration, and shocking secrets that will leave you breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, doesn't have the music go. Son of a bitch. Son of a bitch. Rev, I hate you. It's all your fault. Come on.
Today on the Migscast, the part of Steve Migs will be played by Steve Migs. Because it'd be great, honestly, what if I didn't show up today either?
It'd just be me talking
just
to myself.
You in here alone.
I'd be calling anyone and everyone who's walking by. Hey, Sally in sales, you want to talk to me? I got stuff to talk about. I wrestled.
Yeah, that's right. Actually, we do have a lot to talk about.
Yeah, we do.
Today.
Hey, maybe this will work. Hold on. Oh, yeah. There we go. Suck it, Rev. We don't need you anymore. It is the Migscast. I'm Steve Migs.
And I'm Glenn. I showed up, too.
That's right. Nephew Rev.
Who I think got free passes to the Avengers, and that's where he's at.
I'm pretty sure he has a good reason. It's a movie screening, and the Avengers opens this weekend, so I'm assuming it's the Avengers.
Yeah, he probably got premiere passes.
He boned out at 9:50 this morning.
Whoa! He bailed on the BJ and Migs show.
He's like, as soon as it hits 9:50, man, unless you really need me, can I just leave? I'm like, dude, we don't. At that point, we're talking to Ryan Castle.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, that's fine. Go. He didn't even notice. It wasn't even like he was like, where'd the Rev go? I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing for you, Rev. Just kidding.
It was a good thing, though. I was able to vent quite a bit, before we started rolling about the tragedy that is The Last Jedi.
I know.
Without Rev going, oh, no. Come on. I know more than you because I accept that it's completely stupid and, you know, all this Rev nonsense.
I know. I'm not allowed to be in these arguments because I obviously don't, like, care a lot about Star Wars like you guys do. So I just took it as a fun, dumb action film. And for that, it was incredible.
Well, that's right. You kind of enjoyed it, right?
Oh, I loved it.
But you went and saw it in the seats that, like, you know, when someone farts, your seat smells weird.
Yes.
And sprays water on you. And, like, if a character's hungry, you yourself become hungry.
Yes.
What do they call that? 4D?
4DX, baby.
Fantastic.
Yes.
You know, I'm going to put out a film called The Gynecologist, you know, just so women have to go see this movie in 4D, poof. You know?
Dude. It's a queef experience.
Each chair is loaded with a damn speculum, you know what I mean? Like, just this horrific, you know, mess of a show, and so I can be hated by women worldwide.
The Vampire Strikes Back.
The Vampire Strikes Back.
Well, man, we do have a lot to talk about.
We do.
We got to spend an entire weekend together, which
yes,
is kind of cool.
Yeah,
so
it was nice.
We got Friday night to talk about, but I think we should start off on Saturday night. Bruiser Brody played in Everett, historic Everett, Washington, and what had to have been the drunkest Bruiser Brody show of all time.
Oh,
now,
yeah.
Granted, we've only played a handful of shows, but 4 out of the 5 members of the band were wasted.
JT's doing a sober April.
He picked the wrong month to do that.
It's ironic, his timing on that. But, I mean, and I was like, don't worry, because my whole plan was, don't worry, honey, I'm going to drive us home tonight.
That's right, you drove the van.
Yeah, I was going to drive home, and like when I saw Jeff Rouse, he was like, hey, buddy, and he gave me a hug and didn't let go.
Uh-huh.
And I was like holding him up, and I'm like, oh, how are you doing, man? He's like, I'm doing. And I'm like, God, me too.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, let's get a shot. I'm like, I need to eat. I haven't eaten all damn day.
Right.
So I went and got a cheeseburger and a Jack Daniels and a glass of water.
And this is over at Tony V's
that
in Everett.
V's in Everett. And everything from that point, just people kept buying us drinks. I was drinking Jack Daniels, Jägermeister, and Fireball, I've sworn off of Fireball forever.
I'm sure our three together, it's a great combination.
Yeah. So by the time I got on stage, I was already a damn mess.
Yeah.
And, God almighty, I was telling you about this when I first showed up this morning, when Travis started singing Everyone's Dead,
mm-hmm.
I literally, it was like I was seeing the faces of a lot of my good friends and peers and some of these guys that are like musical heroes to me. It was almost like I'd blink and be like.
Like a movie.
Like, goddamn, they're in the crowd. And I'd be like, no, they're not. You're hammered. You know, no, you know, but Yeah, all this stuff that I obviously had been repressing for a long time. Just like I never let myself feel, courtesy of alcohol. So there's me on stage playing. Everyone's like, oh, dude, I started crying. I couldn't hold it. But I was a mess. Well,
that
man.
Made sense because during the show, and I'm also just gone. I'm not in this stratosphere at that moment. And I'm playing and I'm just hoping I'm getting these songs right. I'm just relying on muscle memory for the most part. And while we're doing Everyone's Dead, I'm like, okay, yeah, we're just feeling this song. And throughout the whole show, it was one of those fun drunk shows because everybody in the band at some point was circling around me, like right. coming up on the riser because the drums are on this big riser. So it's a great chance for you guys to do that riser pose. Right. And everyone, like whether it be Jeff, whether it be Travis, whether it be you, JT, the sober one, he knew. He just kind of hung around in his own little area. I think he just
stayed. Well, he likes to have his fan. He yes. stays by his fan.
He has his biggest fan, which is an actual big fan.
Yeah,
it's
that's
not a,
right.
It's not a human. It's a fan.
It's a fan.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
I love that he travels with a giant fan.
It's
for
part
his
of
hair.
His rig. It's part of his rig.
It's important.
Yeah.
Without it, he's not the same person. That's
part of his show. Yeah, dude.
So all you guys are popping up and smiling like, F yeah. Yeah, dude, we're doing this and we're wasted. And I'm like, yeah, man, this is a blast, having a great time. And Glenn and I, at any given song, are having a moment like this. And Everyone's Dead, we have that moment. Then fast forward 2 minutes into the song, you circle back over to me. And I'm like, yeah, Glenn, what's up? And I'm like, what? Is Glenn mad at me? He does not look happy. Did I F up? Because I'm like, now all this.
I remember you mouthing the words, are you okay?
Yes, I did.
And I think I mouthed back, no, man.
No, you said no. And I'm like, is it me?
No, dude. I was.
And then I think you even went, no. And then you walked off, and I'm like, what's going on?
Yeah.
What did I miss? And then you circle back around, and you had a little bit of a smile, but it was, yeah, we were off to the races.
Oh, yeah, dude. Yeah, it was I didn't realize, so, you know, Jeff kept jumping up on that center monitor. I heard from all the crowd that the show was incredible. From our point of view, it was probably just a point of concern, but everyone said that the show was just, we were coming completely unglued.
Yes.
Travis was stepped on Travis's neck and or head at some point because he had fallen down and was flopping around on the ground screaming his nuts off, and I didn't know what was going on, and I stepped backwards and apparently stepped right on either his throat or his head, just stepped on him like you would on I don't know what. And Linda, JT's fiance, Linda yes. Kemper, snapped a picture of that, and you know we have the song Trouble Is, the Trouble Is You. The meme, it's me standing on Travis's head
this
on stage, and it said, the trouble is booze.
Yeah. It's so great. There's another moment where Jeff is, our bassist Jeff, is on like the riser in the front of everyone, and he's just spitting in the air and letting it land wherever it lands. And after the show, a few people are like, are you mad at Jeff? And I'm like, why would I be mad at Jeff? I love Jeff. And they're like, well, he kept spitting on your drums. And I'm like, I don't even recall that. I remember seeing the spit go in the air, and they're like, well, has anyone ever spit on your drums like that? I'm like, there's a very good chance people have. But I know he didn't do it maliciously, so I'm fine with it. Whatever. It's dry now. Who cares? But to me, the highlight of the entire show was a Facebook post by our buddy Jim Clark.
Oh, I was just going for that, actually.
Dude,
it's
the greatest review.
Because it sums it up. It really does sum up what that show was like. Because it was basically five guys losing their minds on stage. Like, we were losing our minds.
All of us.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not JT, but JT was having his mind blown by his fan.
Yeah, that's right. So JT's fan was losing its mind.
But boy, you're right. We were all going through some stuff up on stage. And again, mind you, we had not practiced for this show, which
no.
I think is funny. And even there was a moment where we were on, I love Tony Fies. Shout out to Tony. His backstage area is not attached to the club. It's an RV that we go in to hang out outside of the club.
I stayed out of there because I was scared if I went in there, I'd get drunk.
Oh, I did.
Oddly enough, by staying in the bar. There was nowhere to hide.
Let me stay
there
away.
There was nowhere to hide, Steve.
No. And there was, I got wasted on the RV. And at one point, Jeff and I are on the RV just talking music, Alice in Chains, whatever it may be. And then he's like, I don't know if I'm ready for this. I'm like, he's like, I think I might just grab the bass and just start playing along to the last live show just to practice. I'm like, if you want, I'll play along with you. I'll grab some sticks. And then we had this plan. And then we decided, well, let's get a shot first. And then we went to the bar and never made it back to the RV. Because then another shot and another shot.
There was nowhere to hide, dude.
And I made the mistake of asking for a double vodka tonic because sometimes I'm just like, I'm not driving. So mind you, my buddy, our buddy, Tavis, is driving me. So he offered, he's like, hey, man, do you want me to give you a ride? And I was like, at the time, I'm like, I'm not really planning on getting drunk at this show or wasted, but I'm coming off of a late night the night before with wrestling, and I didn't get home until about 5 in the morning that night. So I've got sleep in me, but maybe like 6 hours. But I don't really want to drive all the way home from Everett, even if I'm stone cold sober,
because
I'm going to be tired. So I'm like, yeah, man, I would love to take you up on that. Well, boy, oh, boy, my devil inside of me decided, you know what? You're not driving. F it.
Yeah, I remember doing a shot with you at some point and being like, nice.
Yeah.
Because usually you've got the Jeep and you're packed with all your gear.
And I'm being responsible.
And I'm like, I'm going to get a shot. And you're like, me too. And I was like, sweet.
Oh, yeah. And that kept happening. So then finally I'm like, the waitress there, I was like, hey, can I please just get a double vodka tonic? Because I was thinking, like most bars, you know, it'll still be a strong pour. But, and I'm watching her pour this double vodka tonic. And I swear, we were talking about it before they started the podcast. I'm pretty sure she's still pouring vodka in my drink right now. So anyways, Jim, after our set or during our set or at some point during our set, post this on Facebook. And it's, I almost feel like we need to make this.
Like frame it.
Our bio. Yeah. He says, I've never felt so in danger by the band on stage as I did tonight in front of Bruiser Brody.
In danger. He felt actually in danger.
And he was up in the front.
Yeah, him and Eve were right there.
Yeah.
I think they were right there in front of my
No,
side.
I kept like looking at both of them smiling like, I'm wasted.
I'm pretty sure they helped me up. At one point, I went to toggle one of my pedals off and pretty much fell forward through my mic stand and monitor, and they shoved me back onto my feet so I could keep playing. I don't even know what song that was.
And then he goes, and I loved every minute of it. Effing rock and roll. Horns up, bitches.
I've never felt more in danger. Because I know Travis was losing his mind.
Oh, gosh,
yeah. He was crawling around and hanging over the front edge of the stage and screaming as loud as he could. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
But I feel like we got through all the songs. They might not have been perfect, but I feel like they came off well. Everybody that I talked to after the show
it was incredible.
Said that was our best set, which scares me.
Well, Travis said it the next day when we were all texting, like, you know, it's one of those everyone texts like, hey, man, you okay? You know, to see which member may or may not have woken up, right? Because it was that kind of night.
And it's also like that, are we all good with each other kind of thing?
Did I do something I shouldn't have done?
Like, everybody was nothing but great to each other. We were just fun drunk, but or sad drunk, but never, like, angry at each other drunk.
Well, I'm like, you know, Travis, I think I stepped on your head last night. We good?
Like, well, that's why I can't bend my neck.
Yeah. Oh, that explains the boot print on my cheek. But, yeah, man, it was during all those texts. Travis said, man, I didn't realize how bad we must have all needed that show.
We did.
And I don't know what it was about that. I know I had been going through some stuff, you know. I know that's what it was for me, you know, just some nonsense that went on a week or so ago. More social media crap, which I won't even go into. But
yeah,
someone just went completely sideways on me out of the blue.
Oh, yeah.
And it was, you know.
Unnecessary.
Just completely ridiculous. And all I tried to do was.
A friend.
Yeah, a former friend. I tried to be polite and understanding and hey. But anyway, that had been weighing on me badly. And then apparently, you know, I just hadn't processed a lot of other things that had gone down these past couple of years. And it all.
Well, you had a fun line. Not fun, but you know what I mean by it. Like, you were like, Travis, I know I got you with my song, you know, with Nothing to Need.
Yeah, karma's a bitch.
And then all of a sudden he got you with the lyric, because the lyrics of that song hit him hard the first time many times that we performed it. But the first time I remember it, like, it touched him. And
When we first did it in the rehearsal space, Nothing You Need, Travis was literally, he was not in tears, but. You know, a tear or two ran, and he was really struggling.
And a shaky voice. I have the audio of that somewhere. I'm like, if we ever have a box set, that would be a great thing to have on there. Because you could hear the emotion in his voice when he was singing that song for the first time.
He got me his lyrics in verse one to Everyone's Dead. It was just like, it was like he reached into my chest and went, dude, you're going to have to feel this at some point. And all the Jaeger and Jack and Fireball was like, well, now's a good time. There's only 300 people watching. Let's go through it now.
It's funny because I was recently quoting those lines to somebody when I was talking about our band and how we had this song and how heavy and powerful it is and those lines in the first verse especially. And I was telling somebody about it and I was just like, I can't wait to hear that song.
Oh, dude, this song's amazing.
I can't wait to record that song.
Yeah, yeah. And that's happening soon?
2 weeks?
Two weeks?
No, 3 weeks?
I don't know.
It's coming up.
It's coming. We'll be okay.
The 12th and the 13th.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I get to cancel a dentist appointment because of it. I'm excited about that.
There you go. All right. Yeah, cool. Yeah, well, yeah. You'll miss the gas, but
okay.
Yeah, we play that weekend, and then we're in the studio that week.
Yeah, we play that Saturday night at Jazz Bones. I think it's like whatever, the 10th or something. Yep. I don't know. Whatever that Saturday is before that upcoming week. And then, then boom, right in there. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Five more Bruiser Brody songs.
I know. And then the whole length could be made.
That's right.
But, before I forget. So, yeah, what I was going through was obviously just ridiculous amount of late nights prepping for this wrestling event. And that was like finally the weight of the world came off my shoulders and the stress was finally relieved. And it was also, though, like a lot of wrestlers talk about, it's very similar to being in the music. The high of highs when you're performing in front of everybody. And then the low of lows when you realize it's over.
Yep.
And that's kind of what I was going through. And I was trying to get that high of high again with our show, but getting drunk in the process. And then on top of it, and I don't know what it was about that night. And I've had to, I almost feel like there's like a sign on my head, like have awkward conversations with Steve.
Oh, no.
I had so many weird conversations with legitimately probably really good people, but they would put their foot in their mouth. And it got under my skin.
Oh,
and
really?
I was trying my best. Like a lot of, hey, oh, you're on the radio. Cool. You know, I don't listen to your show anymore. And here's why. And then they would then tell me things that we just talked about last week. So I'm like, wait a second.
You were listening last week.
Why did you need to tell me that? Is it just, and in my head, I'm like, okay, maybe it's just an awkward tick of somebody you don't know. You know, some people are bad at small talk. I know I am too. But man, oh man. I heard that multiple times. I don't listen to your show anymore, but blah, 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 blah. And then they start quoting crap that I said last week.
Say something nice, let me bring you down a peg.
Right,
Let me bring you down a peg before I compliment you.
One guy, super nice guy. But it got to the point where I finally just started walking away from people. And I apologize if anyone out there that's listening to this podcast, and I just looked at you, gave you kind of a scowl, and walked off. I just hit my breaking point.
Steve, no, I get
truly
it.
Hit my breaking
I get
point.
It, man.
And I even have to apologize to Justin from Justin and Hannah. He tried talking about work by the end of the night, and he had a couple of drinks. And I was like, man, and Vicky was there too, and I think she was feeling it as well. We're both like drained from talking about work with awkward conversations from people telling us how they don't listen, but then they tell us why they listen.
Yeah, I don't listen, but man, I got to tell you, this morning was...
So I was like, Justin, I can't talk about work anymore. You got to stop it, bro. If it was anyone else, I would walk away from you right now.
And he probably laughed.
And he apologized.
Gets it,
and I was like, man, I'm like, I'm not mad at you, but I just can't anymore. This is at the end of the night. I just want to have a conversation that has nothing to do with work. I don't want to have to hear anybody. I know you won't do this, but I don't want to hear any more like backhanded compliments. Like one guy goes, man, big fan, blah, blah, blah. And then he goes, you know, for better or for worse, people know who you are in this town. I'm like, well, for worse? Thanks.
Well, actually, like that comment there, for better or for worse, I wonder if he meant like, poor you, you can't go anywhere without getting recognized.
See, I took it more like, you know, people might like you, people might hate you.
It could be that. Maybe, I don't know.
Bro, it was just one after another another. And I would sneak off to the RV, but then I would get more drunk in there. And then it got weird in there. Somebody was talking. And it was annoying the living F out of me in there, to the point where I was like, I'm leaving. They're like, are you leaving because I'm annoying you? And I looked at him and go, yes, I'm absolutely leaving because you're annoying me.
That went down.
I couldn't handle it, bro.
Wow, man.
I was losing my mind. I was
my night was so much more wee.
No, mine was constantly having people give me crap about my job, and I can't give people crap back because then I'm the dick. But then I'm walking away, and now I'm the dick. I was trying so hard
to
be nice
terrible.
To everyone.
I didn't know that went
oh,
on,
my
man.
Gosh, it was nonstop. It was at least seven of those conversations. So I kept, every time that would happen, I'd be like, I got to go here.
Dude.
And I'd take a shot or a drink or something.
There's Glenn. I bet he's drinking.
Yeah, Glenn's going to be nice to me. Let's go.
Yeah. Then, that is a drag too, man.
And then it continues. I go to wrestling practice last night. Some guy, first time, shows up. He goes, hey, man, blah, blah, I watch you on the stream all the time for 3-2-1 Battle on Twitch. And he's like, I saw that match. That was incredible. And I'm here because of that. I'm like, awesome.
That's cool.
And then he goes, you know, because, you know, I thought to myself, if Migs could do it, anybody can do it. And I'm like, oh, gosh. Do I?
Am I just, is this just going to be the course of my life? Awkward conversations where I'm being complimented and insulted at the same time all the time?
Yeah, that's, I mean, I wonder if that guy, do you think he was trying to be funny?
I think he meant no harm. Right. I truly think, in a roundabout way, it is a compliment in the sense that, you know, you and anything with radio, I like knowing that if you do a good enough job, people think they can do it too. But look, this guy, then he kept going. And finally, I looked at him and go, buddy, man, this is your first class. I've been doing this for nearly a year. Because he's like, oh, I probably could get into a match pretty soon, too. I'm like, it's not that easy.
Yeah.
And then I watched him in class. And he was not picking this stuff up. And I tried, I didn't say anything, but I almost wanted to be like, I thought anyone could do this, man.
Yeah.
Because I'm like,
yeah, I thought this was easy.
Right. And this was all beginner level stuff. And it was hard for me the first time I did it. It was hard for me for many months when I first did it. And now it's easy for me, the stuff that we were doing, because I've
been
doing it.
You've worked on it for a year.
Right.
I've been year.
Going three times a week, sometimes four times a week.
That's 12 months of training.
About nine for me, but close to a year.
So I mean, what? That's 9 months of training. That's how long it takes to make a human being, dude.
Right? That's
you
why
know?
I'm like,
respect, a-hole.
I just don't want to talk to strangers anymore, man. I just don't want to talk. I suck at small talk or small rhymes to talk, apparently.
Yeah, there you go.
And
it reminds me of those photos. Do you remember in kind of the mid-90s, around 94, 95, I think Rolling Stone had grabbed a picture, but Eddie Vedder got to a point where he would just put on goddamn Halloween masks.
Yes!
Just so he could walk down the street and not get hassled.
Right!
You know? And I remember being like, oh, God, that's got to be rough. Like, all he wants to do is get from his truck to his rehearsal space. And he's like, dude, I've become such a big celebrity now, which is amazing to connect with all these fans and these wonderful people.
Right.
But I just want to walk from my truck. So he put on a goddamn mask.
Dude, that was Macaulay Culkin at WrestleMania.
I remember seeing that and being like, oh, that poor guy. God damn, you know? Like,
Macaulay Culkin put on a giant hoodie with a mask on it that zips up all the way to the top with mesh eyes.
Just so he can be left alone.
So whenever he wanted to leave his seat at WrestleMania to go to concessions, he had to put this zip up on so that nobody would stop him. Because the first time he didn't do it, and I watched, everybody stopped him. And everyone's like, do the Home Alone face.
Oh my God. And the fact that he hasn't opened a blood vessel at this point with people home alone in him, man.
Oh, he was just on Ellen yesterday, and she asked him how often does he do it, and he goes, no. And if someone asked me, I'd just say, no, I won't.
So
and I was like, I don't blame him.
That guy, people tend to forget, especially with, you know, people tend to forget that these are people too.
Yes.
You know, and trust me, if they're like, dude, let's get a picture, sure, you can take a selfie with me. That's actually really nice. But, you know, here's a guy, like with Culky Culkin, right?
Yeah.
I've always called him Culky. I don't know why. Culky Culkin. But he's a grown-ass man now.
He's like 39.
And people are still walking, oh, dude, the face. That is messed up.
Right.
That is messed up. Like, if I walked
in,
I'd be like, hey, man, and that would be it. And I've met a lot of people that I'm a huge fan of, and I've never asked for pictures, and I've never asked for, the only autograph I have is Jim Marshall's. I do have Jim Marshall's autograph.
Right.
Because it was Jim Marshall.
Right.
And he was very polite. He actually, would you like me to sign that shirt, son? And I'm like, oh, yes, sir.
Yes, please.
You know, yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Yeah, dude. But I these are just people. So, like, you know, when you walk up to Culky, be like, hey, man, what's up? And leave it at that. And watch his face light up like, oh, a real person.
Well,
and
dude,
be like, hey, man, how are you?
I was doing the Radio Row interviews, he was there too for his podcast. And so he walked by so many times. Finally, I'm like, hey, man. I'm Steve. He goes, hey, man, I'm Mac. Nice to meet you.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, all right, Mac. That's not even Macaulay. You're just Mac.
Mac.
Awesome. I was like, hey, can I get a picture? He's like, absolutely. No problem. Are you having a good time? He's like, yeah, dude, this is awesome. I'm like, yeah, dude, as a wrestling fan, we're talking about being wrestling fans and how cool it is to see all these wrestling stars, because he was doing interviews and he's a wrestling fan. And then I post the picture and there's a few people like, did you ask him to do the Kevin
Bacon?
I'm like, no.
No.
Why would I do that to him? I had a fun moment. I felt awkward enough asking for the picture, but he was super cool about it. And I wouldn't have asked for the picture if he wasn't super cool at first.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just like, no, I'm not going to be like, hey, man, do the Kevin face as we take pictures.
Yeah, that's hella wrong.
Yeah.
If anything, you want to have some fun, like, dude, by the way, I set some booby traps around, so there's no way Pesci's getting in the building. You know, and he'd probably laugh under his breath and be like, dude, thanks. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
If anything.
Right, but don't make him try. I'm like, hey, monkey,
make the
dance
face,
for me.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, a good friend of mine, Greg Stangle, he and I have always had this running joke about the fat kid from Goonies.
Oh, the Truffle Shuffle.
Yeah, sitting in a bar somewhere, and someone's like, hey, do the Truffle Shuffle. Chunk. And he just pulls out a gun and blows his brains out right there on the spot, man.
And the note says, F you, Truffle
Shuffle.
Yeah,
no, it's just not, hey, I think I can say fat ass. Can I say fat ass?
Yes, yeah. Of course.
So that's what it is. Hey, fat ass, do the Truffle Shuffle. And he just slowly pulls out a 45, puts it in his mouth without breaking eye contact, and just pulls the trigger and blows his brains out.
That would be right the there on the spot. Incredible short film.
I think so.
You know what I mean?
That guy would probably be like, I am down. I will do it for free because people need to learn.
Yeah.
You know?
Gosh. Yeah, it's a weird thing. Like, we were talking about it this morning, and BJ and I kind of don't see eye to eye on this because he still, like, will bring up this example of Jimmy J.J. Walker, remember from Good Times. His catchphrase was dynamite.
Yeah.
Well, he will refuse to do it in radio interviews. Everywhere he goes.
I'm sure he's tired of it.
And that's my opinion on it. Like, when I've had him on in the past, back on my old show, we used to have him on. He's not really that great of a comic, but, like, you'd had him on at the time because he was still a pop culture icon.
Sure.
For the demographic that we were appealing to. And he was fine. He was an interesting guy to talk to. I never once wanted to put him on the spot and be like, say dynamite. Just say it. Say it. And apparently radio stations across the country, that was the big running joke, is everyone would always try and get him to say dynamite. They would try and find random ways to have him say dine and then oh and then my and then BJ always brings up how much he hates the fact that he's like, dude, that's how you made all your money. And I'm like, yeah, but how would you like it? And I brought up an example. BJ one time did stand-up comedy and everyone laughed because his zipper was unzipped. And I was like, what if that's your
to this day, hey BJ, drop your fly,
right?
Drop your fly, man. Unzip
come on,
your pants,
let me
dude.
Get a picture next
let
to
me
your
get
zipper.
A picture with your zipper down, dude.
Zipper man.
Yeah, 35 years later. Yeah.
5 times a day, every day for the rest of your life.
Yeah,
like Alfonso Ribeiro.
He won't feel you on that?
No, he's just like, well, if it made you a good living, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I get making a good living from something that, an iconic
well,
moment.
Good Times ran for how many seasons?
Yeah, I don't
like
even
four
know.
Four or five seasons.
And I don't
seasons,
even know how good of a living he made.
Around 1979 or maybe 1980.
Mm-hmm.
So that is 2 years of that guy's life. And it's not like he wrote a song, like, damn, I wrote a hit song. I'm going to be playing this for the rest of my life. He had a line in a sitcom that ran like 5 seasons.
Yep.
And now for the rest of his life.
Yep. He's a grown ass man.
I would hey man, what's up, dude? Like, you know, just leave him alone.
It's like Carlton from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
That dance?
He won't do
he
it
won't
anymore.
Do Carlton.
And I don't blame him. People coming up and like, "Hey Carlton, do the dance." You know what I mean?
He probably just wants to start swinging.
He also will take out a gun.
Just blow his brains
out. That would
out.
Be the ongoing
he
theme.
He starts dancing and then boom, his body just falls limp.
And it just starts a domino effect of all these one-hit wonder actors with their one iconic moment. Urkel, did I do that?
Dude, somewhere, I think it was on Facebook the other day, it was one of those what do they look like now things. And you should see Urkel now.
How's he looking?
Dude, he's like 6'9". He's like a linebacker.
Oh,
and I'm like, dude, because I always wanted to do that parody of Pearl Jam Spin the Black Circle, which is kill, kill, kill Steve Urkel, kill,
oh,
kill,
Jesus.
Hunt and kill, hunt and kill. See Steve Urkel, see my hand, slap, slap, slapping him down. I hit him so hard he won't understand. And this whole Pearl Jam parody song, instead of Spin the Black Circle, it was Hunt and Kill Steve Urkel.
That is awesome.
You know, I thought so too. But I don't know now. Now that I've seen photos of this guy, I'm scared to be like, that isn't funny. I'll be like, dude, please don't hurt me.
Yeah.
Like, Urkel would tune you up, bro.
Get over here, brother. I'm going to snap you in half.
Yeah, dude. The guy's like 11 feet tall. You know, his neck's as big around as my torso. Yeah, and he's still smiling. And somewhere deep, deep inside that monstrous human being, you can see that Urkel smile.
Yeah, just say, did I do that? And I'll show you what I'll do to you.
Yeah, did I
I'll
do
punch
that?
You in the face and go, did I do that?
You hear his crunching sound. It's like a dog chewing on a chicken bone.
Herp. I'm Urkel.
Awesome. So that said, I'll try and get that Steve Urkel parody banged out.
Yeah.
Then if you guys find me all twisted and broken in an alley, you'll know how it happened.
We'll have to get him on the podcast and play it for him.
Death by Urkel.
I'm trying to think if there was anything else that happened at the show. I think that was I got to give a shout out to all the other bands.
Oh, God, yeah. Dead Rebel Saints were killer. Had you seen them before?
No.
They played Red Fest last year.
I didn't have a chance to see them for some reason during that performance. I'm not even sure why. But I didn't. But man, oh man, the lead singer of Dead Rebel Saints.
Yeah, Kevin Hoffman.
Okay, while they're performing, I'm like feeling it. Sounds good. He sounds good. He's got a cool voice. And then he hits these high notes.
Yep.
And I'm just like, I might have had an awkward conversation with him while we're standing next to each other in the urinal. Again, I was wasted. And I'm like, bro, When you hit those high notes, we're peeing next to each other, and I'm telling him how much.
At least you're not dropping a deuce, you know.
That's a good point.
Yeah,
that would have been awkward if I'm in the urinal dropping a deuce.
Yeah.
Hey,
Steve, your back's all wet. You'll be all right.
It's fine. I've had enough weird small talk. Let me tell you what I have to say. But dude, that band was phenomenal,
yeah.
And his pipes are incredible.
Yeah.
Then Superfecta just sounded amazing.
They killed it.
That might have been my favorite of all the times I've seen.
God bless Kyle Court up there rocking a window pane hoodie. I was like, oh, man.
Yeah.
Probably doesn't think I remember that, which I don't blame him for that. But yeah, it made me smile deep down inside.
That was dope.
He's rocking a window pane hoodie.
I thought that was cool, too.
Yeah.
And then Wyatt Only in the Wreckage.
Killer,
we don't
as always.
Talk about them.
Killer. Nah,
I'm kidding. They sounded phenomenal.
Yep.
I really enjoyed their set, too. I thought everybody sounded great. It was a fun show.
Yeah, it was a great bill.
Yeah.
A great bill, man.
I want to apologize to Guido and Adam, our two of the Titanic douches that I promised to put on the guest list, but they got there before I got to put them on the guest list. I felt awful. See, I hope they now, if they're listening, they understand all the stuff I've been talking about was leading up to me just trying to get to the door to put the guest list. So
yeah,
every time I would try and get to the door, people would stop me. And when I would get stopped, I would get awkward. I would feel in a weird panic mode, and I would disappear to the RV or to the backstage just to get away.
Or to the bar.
Right. So then I kept trying. Okay, let me go there. And I get distracted. Let me go there. And it's like right around 8 o'clock, and I'm like, I got to get everyone's names that I have. I had like four people I needed to put on the guest list. I got to do this. I'm finally getting there, and I'm like, I'm almost there. Like, then I see Steve. And Adam, already in the club.
Hey, man, what's up?
And I'm like, I'm going to put your name on the guest list now. And they're like, it's too late. We already paid. Oh, my God. I am so sorry. I felt like the biggest ass hat.
Oh, dude, if it makes you feel any better, and I don't know at what point of the evening it was, but the same thing, but it was my wife.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, dude, oh, God. Oh, dude. And I broke away and I ran to the door. And God bless Mr. JT Phillips right there at the top of the room.
Oh, my God.
He had my wife. I think she was the very first name. JT did it. And I was like, and I think I even thanked him later. I was like, dude, thank you. He's like, no worries. He's like, yeah, I've been watching you. You haven't been able to kind of break away all night. You've been hanging with one person or another.
Damn you, JT. What about me, man?
Enjoying myself. You know, I had a lot of great conversations.
Yeah.
The ones I had later in the night, I don't remember. The ones I had earlier in the night, I remember.
And that's, you know, honestly, the good outweighed the bad. It's not like everybody was being like, and like even the people that were these awkward conversations, they were all good people. It was just like, it was a perfect storm of weird backhanded compliments.
No, there's a guy that I've known for many years, and obviously I won't say his name, but he...
Wyatt. I'm kidding.
No. He has a tendency, and it's funny, I've talked to other people, and I'm like, man, I've decided that I think the guy's just socially awkward.
Mm-hmm.
But either via Facebook comments or in person, in conversation, he will say stuff that really makes me want to just choke him.
Was he there?
No, okay. He wasn't.
All right.
But we'll be talking and everything's cool and we're catching up and everything's cool. And then he'll make one comment and I'm like, what in the hell?
Mm-hmm.
And then he'll say three more things. And I'm like, what in the hell? What is wrong with you? Like, it actually, like, I'll feel myself getting angry to the point where I want to, like, blow up on him. And then I'll see his comments on Facebook. And I'm like, why would you even put that, a-hole? Why'd you put that? And then I finally realized, like, oh, dude, this guy actually loves you. He's just socially awkward. He doesn't understand that what he's saying is the stupidest, worst possible thing he could say. So you got to let that roll off your back because he's a good guy.
Yep.
He's a good guy. And so, I won't give away the name. He's not anyone I'm close to. He's someone I see once every 6 weeks.
I have a college buddy that's kind of like that.
Yeah.
Every time he comments on something on my Facebook posts, I'm just like, I get so mad, but he's not meaning it as a bad thing.
He doesn't realize that he just stuffed his foot in his own mouth.
Right. Yeah. But it's gotten to a point where now at least on my cell phone, I don't know how, I'm sure you could do it also on the desktop, but you can create people that are exempt from seeing the post.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you see like have that or if you use that.
I never use that a lot. I never use it. I've gotten to a point where I just, and sometimes I'll break my own rules, but there's just certain stuff I just won't post about, say, my car.
Yeah.
Because someone will come along and be like, well, you need to do this. And it's like, man.
I'm not asking for that.
I'm not asking for that. I know that. I'm completely aware of that. And I've already done this, 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 and this.
Right.
So thank you for your stupid and pointless comment that you only put up to prove that you think you know something and you don't.
Yeah.
So like I
cringe posting things on Facebook for that reason.
I self-censor a lot, dude. Like the other day when I was running my chainsaw Easter Sunday all day, but I was cutting
the Easter bunny
shrubs. Yeah, the bunny first. I was cutting up shrubs and vines. So it's like little stuff the size of your thumb, but it's dense.
Yeah.
And you got to go in there sideways. And so sure enough, you're going to throw a chain. That's how that works. You can't, it's not like you're cutting through a big log, dude. You're cutting this crappy viney stuff. It binds up. You'll throw the chain.
Okay.
So I put up a picture and, you know, there's a chain. It just said, and things were going so well. And everyone, you know, LOL. Oh, dude, you could be bleeding. Lots of fun. And of course, there's always check your chain tension. Oh, always.
Thank you.
And I'm like, thanks, retard. You know, if I run it too tight, you know, it's just one of those. I appreciate that you think you're sharing that you know something, and I love you, but... And
some
I know,
people just want to share it just so that it's like their opportunity because they're knowledgeable about something. Yeah. So here's my chance to show that I'm smart.
Well, and then, of course, my knee-jerk was, dude, I'm cutting through vines and hedges, and I have to run the saw sideways. I'm laying on my belly, running the saw sideways, and with little viney stuff like that and shrubs and bushes and stuff, I mean, you're good for a while no matter how you set your chain tension, but eventually it's bound to bind up and probably it's going to get thrown two or three more times a day.
Absolutely.
That's the nature of what I'm working on. I know what I'm doing. Thanks. But I don't have 15 minutes to waste explaining myself.
No, it was just a funny picture and a moment. Dude, I sometimes cringe. Even like right now, I post, you know, stuff from the wrestling that I did on Friday, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a second. But it's like, oh, now I got to just, you know, I got
to always be sure to do the following, Steve.
That, the know-it-all wrestlers, which luckily I haven't experienced. Luckily, I'm only surrounding myself with what appears to be, I'm fortunate, really cool people that
nice
are wrestlers.
People, yeah.
Right, that are supportive. Crazy. But then you also get the people that I'm like, I'm waiting for, you know it's fake, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, okay, like, obviously, like, we know what we're doing. This is a team effort. My opponents are looking out for my safety just as much as they're trying to hurt me, quote unquote. But like, dude, it's a performance. Do you tell somebody, you know, it's fake when they're sharing pictures of them in a play?
Well, and really,
you know what I mean?
Actually, beautifully put.
Yeah.
The other thing I'd say is, you know, do you go to Cirque du Soleil?
Right.
And watch those tumblers and be like, ah, oh, it's so fake.
Right.
They're not actually falling.
Right. And that's the thing. It's such a funny term to use with wrestlers. It's like, yes, the outcome is fake. It's determined.
You guys are hurling each other through the air, flipping each. Some of the stuff I saw at Showbox Market.
I want to get your perspective because you're not even a wrestling fan, and you came to BattleMania, which made my night.
Oh, dude, you were wrestling. Tony and I both were so excited for the whole thing. So we got there early. We didn't know anything about how it was structured, how long it was going to last.
Right.
We did not know any. You mean I don't? This isn't my thing.
Yeah,
at all.
Uh huh.
You know. It's like taking the church lady to a Slayer concert. She does not. Should I bring my knitting stuff? Well, maybe.
Yes.
You might be able to sit down. I don't know. Go ahead and bring the stuff.
It's a perfect time to knit during South of Heaven.
So that's me going to this wrestling event.
Yeah.
And so, but you're in it, and I got to be there, bro.
No, I meant everything. The people that I cared about that live in Washington were all there.
Oh, dude. Yeah. Well, you had a horde of fans.
I did. I had my family, my wife's family, cousin, in-laws, my wife, of course, I had Ted, Matt, the overnight guy, Tyler, his lady.
B. Thorpe was there.
Yep.
Brian Thorpe was there with his lady.
Yep.
There was
a
Vicky
lot of
was there.
Vicky, yes.
Yeah, man. So, you know.
Ziggy.
Was Ziggy there?
I Ziggy
didn't
see was
Ziggy.
There.
Will Andrews and Tara were ringside.
I
bro.
Saw Will's ringside, which
yeah.
was awesome.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, Richie from Thunderbeast.
Oh, yeah, I hung out with Richie quite a bit that night.
Yeah,
actually.
He worked his way towards the front. Like, one of the few people I saw while I was wrestling was just Richie, because he's a tall...
Richie could be a wrestler.
Right. Like, I legit could have tagged him in, and people would have believed it. Like, he would have been the biggest-looking dude.
He's a big, yoked, Viking-looking guy.
Right. Yeah, I should have had him as my, like, my muscle. Like, he would have been my Diesel, and I'm Shawn Michaels, not being attractive. Me, not him. But it was awesome seeing so many people I care about there.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Yeah.
So,
JT made it.
JT was there. That's right. Yeah, obviously, I mean, there was just a bunch of, I think, that are the regular 3-2-1 battle people.
Of course.
That know you, love you, know you as the commissioner.
Right.
Now you're in your first actual match. And, dude, the support, you could feel it. It was overwhelming. But.
Yeah.
So Tawny and I get in. We ran right into Ted, Matt, hey, and blah, blah, blah. So we go upstairs, and it was the warm-up match.
Yes.
And the warm-up match kind of looked the way it would look if... you know, some kids were playing wrestling in their front yard. I'm sorry. But Tony and I walked in and saw that.
Sure.
Oh, man.
A battle royal is a tough thing for anyone to watch that's not a wrestling fan.
Right.
Because you can't really distinguish what's going on. It's a giant cluster F. It's an opportunity to get a lot of people who are a part of the show on a frequent basis to be in a match in front of people. But there's no... There's not enough room to have everybody have a match.
Because, man, you know, my thing, it wasn't even WWE. It was WWF.
Yeah.
Way back, I remembered, like, Superfly, Snuka, and Hulk, the Hulkster. And, you know, and I was into it for, like, 6 months, and then I was into something else.
Sure.
I wasn't one of the kids that got into it. So, but I remember watching those guys, and so I had no idea what I was in for.
Uh-huh.
That's the best way I can think of. And seeing the opening Battle Royale is kind of like, okay, well, let's see where this goes.
Right.
So Tawny and I are both like, all right, let's, you know, oh, well, hey, there's so-and-so, and there's so-and-so. So we found a great place at that upper bar where you can see the whole floor.
It's a great spot.
Then they had the first actual match.
Which and, of course, a six-pack challenge.
Got to see you briefly.
Yes.
So, and that was cool. So
I know, I got to see almost everybody in one fell swoop before I needed to start focusing on getting dressed.
On getting your thing together.
Yeah.
Right, man. So then this first, I'm just going to call it an actual match happened.
Yep.
These guys came out. And, dude, so for everyone that's not familiar with the Showbox Market, it's a big hardwood floor. They had a ring built on the hardwood floor that's probably at least 3-4 feet high.
Mm-hmm.
These guys were getting on the upper turnbuckle, you know, the third rope, the highest rope.
You're talking probably like 9 feet high.
Yeah, and they're jumping another 5-6 feet in the air and doing 3 and 4 somersaults and then tackling an opponent that is not in the ring, but out on the floor right next to a steel barricade.
Yes.
And so it went from, ooh, I wonder what this is going to be like, to holy effing S real quick.
Yeah.
Like, Tony and I were like, oh, my God, because these guys were doing, like, half gainers and somersaults and flips, and they had to be 10, 12 feet in the air over a hardwood floor.
Like, practically hitting the light fixture.
Dude, and from where we were... We couldn't see anything that was happening down by the barricade, so you just see this guy flip through the air and vanish. I'm like, okay, is he dead?
He's dead.
Did that guy just snap his neck? I mean, what the hell? So at that point, really everything got turned on its ear, and Tony and I were like, this is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's go time.
And honestly, the matches that followed were all great, like the level of performance, the athleticism involved.
Yeah.
And really, like, just a lot of the crazy aerial stuff, and then the where you grab and assist with flips and tumbles, and I mean, it was a hell of a thing to watch.
Yep.
But that first match of the night,
that was incredible.
Those guys, it was mind blowing. Like, I can't even believe that no one is being taken out of here on a stretcher. The stuff these guys were doing,
and they do that so often.
Dude, it was killer.
Every week, these guys are doing those kind of things. I mean, and whether it be a 3-2-1 battle or any show, and a lot of those guys are from the Vancouver area. So you saw a few of those guys that were there. I mean, Alex Zane's from Kentucky, the guy that won it, and that dude's nuts.
Dude, it was killer to watch. So.
Yeah.
The whole rest of the night proceeded like that, with that obviously setting the tone. And then came, you know, the whole time we're like, I wonder when Steve's match. And then we're talking to people. I think he's after the intermission, but we're not sure how long. And how do you know how late it's going to go? I mean, is it going to go? We don't know. And so we're just trying to get a feel for when we're going to get to see you.
I kept hearing from people that like monitor our Twitch feed, which has like, if you want to go back and watch all of Battle Mania, just go to twitch.tv/321battle. All the past shows, future shows will be on there when we do them live on Twitch, when we perform like, you know, every other week, every other Friday at Evolve Fitness. But I guess like one of my buddies was like monitoring and he says, everyone's just like, when's Migs wrestling?
Yeah.
When's Migs wrestling? He's like, we have a lot of new people watching on Twitch.
That's what it was like in the crowd, bro.
And, yeah.
The energy of the crowd felt the same way. Like, they were definitely enjoying the show because it went up 500 notches.
Yeah.
And so it was like, oh, dude, all right. Because I'm sure, because everyone was, you know, that whole solid steel thing. Every time the whole crowd, solid steel!
Yeah, everyone, it's a call and response.
Yeah. And so the crowd was definitely engaged, and I think, but a lot, I wonder how many people there were new people.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I know Tawny and I were.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And, like, we were just like, this is going to be fun. So, yeah, when I remembered, what was the name of the team that you faced off against?
The Hellfire Club.
I remembered you showing me the battle card, the ticket, the card for that. And so when they said Hellfire Club, I turned to Tawny, I was like, this is Steve's match. I recognize the name of Hellfire Club.
Yeah.
I think he showed me, like, a playbill.
Yes.
For the match. And then sure enough, all the those guys all came out. One dude was rocking the No Migs t-shirt with your face and a big the big no symbol, which was great.
The other guy had on his wrist tape, one word on one side it said F, the F word, and the other one said Migs.
Yeah. So obviously at that point, we're like, oh, this is it. But then you were the first one they introduced from Team Migs, and the room just went completely insane.
It was nuts to feel it.
Yeah, man, when we were talking the next day, you're like, oh, I didn't even think about how I was going to come out. And I'm like, dude, how you came out was great. Yeah. The room went berserk, and you walked out, hopped in the ring, started pointing at the crowd and, you know, antagonizing the guys from Hellfire Club. And, dude, it was really cool.
That
it
moment, to give a behind-the-scenes thing, it was like, so we were, obviously, wrestling, it's what is fake. We were prepping and planning the whole day. Everyone's like, are you nervous? I'm like, I'm freaking beyond nervous. Anytime we started talking about the match and coming up with what we were going to do, sweat. My feet were sweating. Like, that's how much I was sweating. But then once everything, and everyone told me this, there's like, the minute you walk out that curtain, those nerves will leave you.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know. They're like, and I've experienced that with stage announcements. I've experienced that playing music. But I was like, you're adding physicality to this. You're adding, putting someone else's health and well-being in your hands.
Yeah, you could mess up and break someone's wrist or someone's neck.
And my buddy Benny, B-Boy, who's one of the guys that flew in for this, he travels around the world. He's a great wrestler. He's known, he's been on TV. He's an incredible guy. And he was even like, I want to make his point. He made it a point to talk to all the new people and just say, hey, I know you're nervous. But figure out a way to keep that in check, because when you're nervous, you could hurt someone.
Yeah.
So when he's telling me this, I'm like, great, thanks, Benny. Now I'm even more nervous. So all these people, though, keep telling me, you're going to be fine the minute you walk out the curtain. So I'm waiting to go out the curtain, and then it hits me. I never put any thought in how I'm going to walk out. Because typically a lot of people practice how they're going to do it. They have a very well-choreographed entrance. Like, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to spin around here. And I was so caught up in learning my moves and doing what I was doing that I never even thought about that part. And it's a big part. A wrestler's entrance sets the tone. And I'm the first guy coming out. I didn't even know I was going to be the first to come out. We all thought I was coming out last. And then all of a sudden they say my name and I'm like, oh, I guess I got to go, which was probably a good thing. So I didn't overthink anything. And I come out and sure as S, everyone, what they said, the minute I felt that crowd.
Dude. Yeah.
And looked out and saw everybody.
You appeared at the end of that runway and that room exploded. And you just walked out like, you're goddamn right.
I was like, I got
this. It was happening, man.
Oh, the nerves went away.
No, but dude, what you projected, though, literally what you projected was, you're goddamn right. And I'm here. We are going to destroy these guys. This is what's up.
Yep.
This is, it was really cool.
And then the match happened.
It was
happens.
Really cool, man.
And I thought the match was like, I went back and watched. It's funny, when it was going on, it felt like an eternity. Like, certain moments where I'm doing this and I'm supposed to get, this happens. And like, you're basing everything on spots and certain moments. Like, okay, when this happens, I know to do this. And at one point, I'm like, when is this going to happen? It's supposed to happen already. This is like at least 5 minutes. I go back and watch. It was like 15 seconds.
Yeah, dude.
It's
so
weird how everything slows down.
With the tag team, the way it was done, man, I think you were only in the ring for a total of a minute and a half, 2 minutes. It probably felt like an eternity.
More than that, because I have a video of it, so I timed it.
Okay,
but
each wrestler individually only had a couple minutes in the ring.
Yeah, absolutely right.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
It may have been more than a couple, like 2 minutes, but
you're close to it.
Just a few minutes, because each guy gets in and does a thing, and then sometimes there's two cats on the one dude, and you guys are out of the ring, in the ring, and it was one of those things too, where it was having now seen all these various skill sets.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm like, I wonder what my friend's skill set is like.
Yeah,
what's Steve going to be able to do? What's he not going to be able to do? Because the Birdman.
Oh, the
good
bird.
God! That guy's like an acrobat.
He's incredible,
whipping around people's heads and flying through the air. And I mean. So you got Birdman on your team.
Yeah.
So then I'm like, okay, what's Steve's skill set going to be like compared to Birdman?
Right. I got three high flyers on my team. Guys that do crazy stuff from the top of the turnbuckle.
Yeah.
And then there's me.
Well, no, but it was cool in that when you got in there were just a couple quick holds.
Yep.
Couple hits,
yep.
And then pretty quickly it evolved into some flips, some tumbles, some clotheslines,
and chaos.
And like the more it was just like, as it escalated and you did more and more, and then I got to see the crazy move where the two dudes pick you up at the same time and
the double choke slam,
on your neck,
because
I turned to Tawny, I was like, that was the move that Steve's dad saw on video and went, what the F are you thinking?
Dude, when we were planning out the match, they're like, well, what do you want to do in that moment?
That was the move,
Like, what do you want to do in this situation? I'm like, can we do that move again? They're like, yeah. I was like, great, that's for my father. like, I did that specifically so that when my dad sees it, he'll be like, what are you, nuts again?
Yeah, well, you're still crazy.
Yeah. It turned out great. Everything was like, but dude, there was one moment which was fun. If you watch the video, and it's up on my blog, just go to KISW.com and check out Steve's blog. There's a whole piece about it, including a video montage of my moments in the ring. So you can just see the parts that I'm in the ring. It's about like 10 minutes or so, because like there's parts where I'm in the ring not doing anything, but I wanted to share those moments because there's some cool stuff going on around me.
Yeah.
And one of the best moments was the Hellfire Clubs are all, the guys are all on the ground.
Oh, yeah. I know the moment you're talking about.
Matt Cross comes in. Guy, I mean, he's on Lucha Underground. He's everywhere. Quick fun story about him. Before everything started, we go through the whole match, and he looks at one of the guys on the other team and goes, hey, man, you guys are really asking a lot for a new guy to remember. That's a lot of stuff. And they're just like, well, it's too late now. But
this is going down.
And then afterwards, he's just like, he looked at the same guy and goes, he crushed it, man.
Nice.
Like, which I thought was really cool. So he goes, flies out of the ring with a suicide dive. Then Cole Crazy comes, jumps on the turnbuckle, does a backflip moonsault kind of a thing, lands on everyone.
Yep.
Then everyone's chanting for the bird. The bird comes out, top turnbuckle, somersaults into everybody or whatever it was, right? And then all of a sudden, everyone starts chanting me. And it's like, I thought at that moment I was going to have to go out into the ring and get people to start believing that I'm now going to do something crazy. That was the whole idea. So people already were on it. Like, that's how hot this crowd was.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, man. So then I'm like hamming it up. Like, should I jump? Should I jump? I'm going to jump. I'm thinking I'm going to do it. The ref's like, don't jump. I'm like, screw you and screw them. I'm jumping. Hit the ropes. Come running back. Sage and the other team kicks me right in the chest.
Yeah.
Uncle Muscle slaps me in the chest and then the double choke slam. My wife, I didn't tell her if we were going to win. I didn't tell her what was going to happen. All I told her before was, based on the planning of this match, I'm going to be doing more than I thought. And that's all I told her.
Well, I know. I thought you were diving out through the ropes.
Everybody
did. Because there was a whole pileup. And again, yep, from where Tony and I were, it was great because we could see the ring, clearly see the ring. It was rad. But once the guys were out of the ring and fighting between this steel barricade,
solid steel
barricade, and the ring, we couldn't see any of that.
Yeah.
So we knew that all the wrestlers were down there in a pile and God knows what was going on. And that's when you were hyping the crowd. And yeah, everybody like, Steve started running for those ropes, and I'm like, Jesus, man, he's going to dive out through those ropes. I can't believe he's going to do that. I can't believe it. And that's so you're saying Sid probably felt the same way, because Tawny and I were like, he's going to dive. That gap between that damn steel barricade and the side of the ring, wasn't that wide?
It's about 4 or 5 feet.
And I'm like, dude, if he slides out there too fast, he's going to smash his face open. Like, I was watching you run towards it, literally thinking, I can't believe he's going to do this.
And you're like, he's got to play a show tomorrow.
Yeah, and like, oh, and I wasn't even thinking about that, show or no show. I'm like, my buddy is about to split his goddamn head open.
Yeah.
And at the last second, that dude went in, came in under the ropes and got your feet out from under you.
Oh, dude, yeah, he kicked me right in the chest.
And I kind of did the, oh, okay, they planned that. That was a good plan.
It was great. It got the crowd so hyped.
Because I thought you were going to do it. And honest to God, man, I was like, dude, Steve is going to bust his head open.
My wife.
He's going to get hurt.
She said she legit started panicking.
Oh, God, Steve.
And I
did. Adrian!
Yeah, so she's like, she's freaking out. My mother-in-law is freaking out. My cousin is. I think my father-in-law is filming it because he thinks this is just awesome. Like, he's never been to a
wrestling
event.
We'll see him in the hospital tomorrow. Yeah!
He, same like you, never been to one. Probably thought wrestling was hokey. That opening match hooked him in.
Dude!
Like, he's filming the whole thing.
Those guys were mind-blowing.
He pulled the Weekend Warrior, the bigger guy that flipped out. He pulled him aside to talk to him.
Yeah.
But so, they're all freaking out. So when that happened, my wife said, I was so relieved when he kicked you in the chest. I'm like, wait a second. But the funny part was we were talking afterwards about that moment because we were all geeking out about like how that worked better than we even anticipated. We thought we were going to have to really create this illusion that I was going to truly jump out.
Dude, the crowd bought it hook, line, and sinker.
Well, they wanted it before I could even sell it.
Yeah.
So it was just about me being believable enough.
Get them.
Right.
Yeah, dude.
So.
Oh, it was believable because I was standing there going, I can't believe this idiot's going to do
so
that.
Happy.
He's going to dive up to the ring, and he's going to stand up with blood running out of his skull, and my wife's going to say, is that fake? And I'm going to say, no.
That's his real blood.
Yeah.
That's a real gash.
I thought you were doing it, man. I thought you were doing it, Steve.
And then we were joking, and Sage was like, well, what if I didn't make it back in the ring in time? And I was like, honestly, I would have done it.
Would have been out through the
ropes. I would have had no choice, but like the adrenaline was there. In my head, I was truly going to do it. And that was the weirdest thing. I had a conversation with Mr. Fitness, who was part of one of the tag teams. He had the fake mullet.
Yep, they got ripped off.
That guy, I love that guy. He's one of my favorite wrestlers in town. Like, he's so good at the character and who he is, and he's just a great dude. I meet up with him after the show's over. We went to the place next door called the pub or it's the bar or something.
I think it's Whiskey Bar.
Okay.
I think.
So we popped in there and he was in there and I'm just talking to him and I'm just, and he's like, he just looks at me and he's a super, like, just, there's an aura of just like, I can't even explain it, like super knowledgeable and intensity about wrestling when you talk to him. Like he just knows it and he lives and breathes it. And then, so he looks at me and just kind of like puts his hand on my shoulder. He goes, did you feel like you were in a real fight tonight? And I looked at him and I said, yes, I 100% felt like I was in a real fight. He's like, isn't that amazing? Like that's what happens when we're in the ring. Like you forget that this is a performance. If you're prepared well enough and you know what you're doing and you get lost in the moment, you truly do feel like you guys are fighting. And it's like, you're 100% right. Like, yes, of course, we're not truly trying to hurt each other, but we're also hitting each other hard enough to make it believable to the fans. So like when I gave that guy those forearms and I was legit laying into his neck, I know his neck is a safe spot, but I'm hitting him as hard as I can. And when I gave him those chops, they were full power. Like, I want people to hear it. And, like,
you can hear the slap.
Right.
All the way in the back of the room, dude.
When you hit me, hit me. I'm like, I will. And he's like, don't even worry about me getting mad. Just don't, like, actually hit my nose, hit my face. But, and then even with Greg, when he kicked me in the chest, he's a kickboxer, like, by trade. Like, he knows how to hit. And he said, I'm going to hit you. And I said, I would expect nothing less.
Yeah.
And he's like, but just don't fall down. I was like, well, then don't hit me so hard. He's like, but I'm going to. I'm like, okay, this is going to be weird. But like that's what I mean when it's going on and you forget about the performance. Like you are in that moment. So you're becoming this, you are in this fight. And he was so right. Like when everything was firing all cylinders, I truly felt like I was at war with these guys. They weren't my friends anymore. They weren't my, just cohorts and buddies and guys that I have many nights training with. They were my enemies, and I hated them. When I flipped him off, I meant it. When I told him to go F off, I meant it. And when they were doing it to me, they meant it. It's something really kind of weird and cool about that.
When the guy blew the snot rocket in your face, was there any real snot involved?
I don't know if there was or wasn't.
I only said that as a joke because of everything you were just saying. I'm sorry. I couldn't resist.
No, but...
But that was a moment in the fight I went, dude, I wonder if any just got on him. Like, I watched that. He straight snot rocketed you, and you were just like, oh, Juan, what? Like, you know.
And then one of the highlights was after everything was all said and done, I go into the back, and I'm talking with Matt Cross, the guy that travels, and he's been on, like, all these great shows. And I was like, so what do you think, man? And he's like, dude, that was an incredible first match. He's like, you hit everything you were supposed to hit. You handled everyone with care. Everything looked believable. He's like, and the way you sold every move, because he and I talked about this at lunch one day earlier last week. We went and got lunch because he stood in town for a whole week because he was at Defy as well. And he's like, man, moves are good. Don't get me wrong. And that guy could do moves. I mean, you saw he was flying everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
He's like,
an aerialist, man.
But that's not what makes people remember you. It's your emotions. It's like the moves are secondary to the emotion that you're giving people. So make a connection with the audience. And I thought about that the whole time. So when I'm getting hit, I'm looking at the crowd like, help me. Or, you know what I mean? So it's, and even when I'm on the apron, I'm looking at the crowd like, let's go, come on.
Yeah, dude, you watching you out of the ring was as entertaining as watching you in the ring.
And that
I mentioned that the other night,
All so important to the show. It's like you want, if we're supposed to make people suspend reality and enjoy wrestling, we're not doing them a service if we're not also suspending reality and legit being a part of it. So, and he just said, hey, man, he's like, dude, there are people I wrestle with on a high level at like Lucha Underground and across this country with high indie, big name indie stars that I wish could sell as well as you did tonight.
Oh, that's got to make you feel great, man.
Between that, my wife telling me how proud she was of me, and my trainer, who I'll leave out just for kayfabe reasons, just because I don't want to keep the magic alive, even though obviously we let you in. People know the world of wrestling. I'm not going to like blow anyone's minds by the fact that things are planned out.
Right.
But out of respect to him and all that, the fact that he pulled me aside and told me how proud he was of me,
that's great. That's got to mean the world to you.
Meant everything.
Yeah, dude.
Like, I honestly did like start tearing up when him and like, after the match was over, I go into the back, and every single wrestler is waiting to hug me. And it was just like, it was that moment where I was like, this is something, it's so cool to be in a world with people. And 321's a special breed because they are, it's more of a family than just a bunch of wrestlers that there's egos. I mean, there's egos and everything, but everyone's ego gets checked at some point. Like, everyone's really cares about the locker room vibe in 3-2-1 battle. And to know that every single wrestler had believed in me, that I could do this before. And then when it happened and I finished, they were all like, we told you. Nice. We knew you had this.
Yeah.
I can't put that into words. I try, but I can't. Like, it's to know that a group of people that you respect and admire and consider friends that just straight up say, we believe in you.
Yeah, they respect you as well.
We trust you to put you in a position where you're on a main part of this show. And not only just not just having you sit on the apron and come in for a couple clotheslines and a pin, but actually have you have put you in this position to do spots and be a part of the story and trust that you won't F it up.
Yeah.
It was cool, man. It definitely brought me to tears. It was like one of those moments at the end when I felt all that love from everybody. And then I checked my phone and all the texts from you, Ted, and my wife, and my mom-in-law, and everyone else that has my cell phone number. It was just, was next level,
you know,
bro.
Man,
it was next level.
I shot that video, and it doesn't capture it, but when the match ended, because I could not bring myself to video your match because I wanted to watch it.
Dude, a lot of people commented like on the video. They're like, nobody has a phone out.
No.
Which was cool.
I was like, dude, I videoed you coming out. And then I was like, that's it. I'm putting this damn thing in my pocket. I don't want to miss anything.
Right.
But I did pull it back out at the end when you were basically hopping up on all the different corners of the ring and acknowledging the audience. The audience was going wild for you, dude. Just wild for what had just went down. Like, it had to have been amazing. And that's why, you know, we got down to the car and I sent you the text I sent you. And I was like,
God, I meant everything to read that.
That sounds weird, bro. I didn't know how else to put it. I was like, I am so effing proud of you. No. I didn't know how else to put it, bro, because it was a hell of a thing to witness. It was really something amazing, man.
Well, you've
cool.
kind of been a part of the, I mean, most Tuesdays I'm here hurting.
Yeah.
Tired. Maybe even like.
Well, I think I've given you more than a few ribbings over know, your lackluster forward rolls. And
yeah. Everything, dude. And it's funny, like, a lot of the people who I train with, they were like, we're watching and they were like blown away. And they're like, where was, like, not that I'm bad in training. I'm just.
You were next level in the ring.
Right. Like, it's like band practice.
Yeah, you upped it. Dude.
You don't go next level in band practice. You just make sure you got the mechanics down.
Yeah.
It's no different than wrestling. I just want to make sure I knew how to do everything. But then when it came time for showtime, then all of a sudden the selling and the character and the everything that I learned from my trainer, even him and I were talking about it last night, he's like, I could just see how you. Everything I've told you were doing wrong was corrected before that match.
Yeah.
And he's like, that's such a cool thing to see that you actually listen. And one of the guys even on the other team was just like, you're a sponge, man. Like, whenever any of us told you to do something, you did it.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I don't want to make anyone look bad.
Yeah. And you also want
to
excel. Look yeah. I want to look good. You want to excel, man.
Like, part of me knows this video is going to be somewhere. And I'd like to give the least amount of ammunition to trolls. That I can, so I want to make sure I nail it. And I'm not saying I could watch it, and there's a couple of things I wish I could have done a little bit better, but it's so minor that I'm not going to beat myself up over
dude,
it.
Well,
it's like missing a note on a song.
I don't know any better, but everything I saw, and even, honestly, it's funny, the video footage you showed me at the show, some of the stuff comes off better because of the camera angles than it did in the moment.
Yes.
So, because I was watching, I was like, man, I remember that, but I don't remember that like that.
Yeah.
Dude. Like, yeah. So, honestly, the video, all the footage I got to see, I thought was just killer. Steve.
Yeah, I thought it was super.
Really cool.
It captured me in a good light.
Not that any of it looked bad live, but some of it looked even cooler.
Absolutely.
Because there was a camera angle involved. Mm-hmm. Like, they had you from a good spot, and it was like, oh, dude, yeah. You know? Yeah.
Awesome.
Totally, man.
Oh, dude, it was so much fun. And then one of the most surreal moments happened on Saturday. So that all happens. I wake up. I mean, honestly, by the time the show's over, we have to tear it all down. Here's a funny thing, too. Showbox staff, props to them. They were enamored with us, which I thought was cool.
That's great.
Like, Jonna, you know Jonna from that.
Of course I do.
Yeah. Sweetheart, I love that woman. I haven't seen her in years.
She's
I was so
awesome.
Happy to see her.
Yeah.
And she was just like, can you guys come and do this more often? I was like, you had a good time.
I'm sure it was a nice change for them.
She said, A, it was fun to watch you guys. And it was a blast seeing you, my friend, up there. Like, when I found out you were wrestling, she's like, I made it a point to work that night. I was like, thank you. And she's like, but B, it just breaks up the monotony of live shows.
Yep.
It's something different.
Yeah.
And then C, we didn't realize this because, you know, when we do it at the gym, as soon as the show's over, it's teardown time. We all, because it's a gym. So we have to clean up, pick up everyone's cans, throw everything away. Anyone who came that left a mess, we as a team, the wrestlers and
the
staff,
pick it all up. Yeah.
We, as soon as we're done, we're cleaning up. We did no different in the dressing room. As soon as we were done, we cleaned up. And as we left, they're like, what are you guys doing? We're like, what do you
mean?
We're
cleaning up.
We're cleaning up. They're like, nobody ever cleans up in the dressing rooms. The bands never clean up. We're like, well, that's just what we do. We don't leave a place worse than it was, and we show up. And they really appreciated that. So I think the partnership from
I was so excited because we had talked about it on previous casts. I mean, renting out and putting a show on at Showbox Marcus financially is a big undertaking. I'm not sure what kind of insurance policies they had to purchase, whether they did it. They could have done it independently, which then you need a city settled business license, or maybe they did it all through AEG corporate. I don't know how they did it, but I know what it's like to do business with that venue. And so the day before when I saw the text string when they were like sold out, I was like, yes!
Yep.
As all I thought was, you know, the whole 3-2-1 battle guys, this is already a victory. It's already a success. They probably, not only are they just, they didn't just break even, they're not losing money.
Yep.
They probably made money. This is sold out. It's going to be a tremendous event. And then, as I understand it, the Showbox reassessed because they were like, it was such a unique thing for them.
They remeasured the.
They reassessed and they're like, let's reopen the doors, and it sold out again.
In like an hour or 2 hours. Yeah. Like we were able to add another 50 or 60 more tickets.
And then they were gone.
And they were gone as soon as we announced that they were there.
They were cat scalping when Tawny and
that
I got
was
there.
Nuts.
Showed up, guys, like, tickets. I got tickets. And then Tawny and I were like, thank God we got tickets to this.
Yeah, dude, it was so funny. We were all in the locker room and somebody came in and goes, you won't believe this. Somebody's scalping outside. And we all started celebrating.
There were a couple, bro. There were a couple people scalping.
My buddies Cooper and Cole, you might have seen them. They kept making reoccurring appearances. They were the two cops throughout the night. They're just wrestlers, obviously dressed as cops. That's their gimmick. And I was like, if it wasn't illegal, you should go out there and confiscate those tickets. Because how funny would that be if two wrestler cops?
Hey. Yeah. Can't be scalping here. Dude runs up around the corner.
So then Saturday, so as you know, like I went to WrestleMania, had some wrestlers cut like promos, and I talked to wrestlers about how I was having my first match, and some seemed legitimately interested. Guys like Johnny Gargano, Braun Strowman, a couple of guys in the world of Ring of Honor, like Shane Taylor and Jay Lethal. And one of the guys that was the most interested and was like asking me a lot about it, also Gallows and Anderson, was Baron Corbin, big dude in the WWE. And he's been on our show a few times, so we've kind of become like Twitter buddies. You know, and anytime he sees me in the crowd, he's the one I remember I told you was like a real bad guy. And then as he walked by, he shook my hands like, good to see you.
Yeah.
He's that guy.
Yeah.
So when I see him at WrestleMania for Radio Row and I interview him, I told him about it. I showed him the video of me taking that bump. He's like, that's awesome.
Nice.
He's asked me how long I've been training. How's it going? So anyways, I have him cut a little promo saying, Hellfire Club, you don't know what you're getting into with this guy.
Oh, you gotta love that.
Yeah, it was awesome. Saturday morning, I wake up. I see I have a direct message on my Twitter and it's from him. And it just says, how was it, man? And I'm like,
He remembered to check in about your match, dude.
The next day, I was just like, holy crap.
That's cool. That means you were on his mind. He woke up and was like, man, I wonder how Miggs did. Yeah.
So I write him back. I'm like, hey, man, it went incredible. Sold out. Did really well for my first time. Lots of compliments. It was great. Thank you again for taking time to talk to me about it. If you want, I'll send you a link once I get a link to the video. And I was like, I might not respond, but I just figured I'd throw that out there. He writes back, F yeah, I would love to see it. So I just sent them to him yesterday. But I was just like, that's cool, man. The fact that...
That's kind of amazing, yeah.
It just solidifies how cool some of these wrestlers are, in my opinion. Like, I mean, here's a guy who doesn't need to. And in fact, he's a guy that's considered to be like a big jerk in the stories. And then some people don't like him because they just assume he doesn't... I don't know. I think people believe his character too much.
Because his character
comes off as being, I don't care about wrestling. I don't care about indie wrestlers. I don't care about anyone. I'm so good that, you know, blah, blah, blah. So people, I think, really do believe that.
They just take it seriously.
But he's like a legit guy that loves wrestling. He wouldn't be doing this if he didn't love wrestling. And the fact that he cared enough just to check up on some guy that he barely knows but talked about wrestling with the next day.
That's like I'm saying. That's proof. You were on his mind. He was like, man, I wonder how Miggs' match went last night. I mean, that's got to make you feel great.
Oh, dude. I was like, that was like the cherry on top. I was like, okay. He watches. He goes, dude, that was embarrassing.
You could have replied like, dude, still in the hospital. Things went terribly wrong.
I tried to do your finishing move and I broke my neck.
Yeah, dude.
Learned it by watching you.
I dove through the ropes and hit the barricade face first, 37 stitches.
Yeah, but I did. I saw Ziggy. I remember I got to introduce him to my wife. Yeah. It was cool to be able to introduce my wife to a lot of the wrestler guys because she hears about all these guys but never met them. So it was fun for her to be able to finally put some faces with names. I'm like, that's that guy that I do this with, and that's this guy, and that's the guy I'm wrestling. And at one point, one of them, as I'm walking, one of them, my opponents is walking, and we walk by, and he just gives me a look like he gives me like that. F you look, and I give him an F you look, and my wife's like, what was that about? I'm like, oh no, that's my friend. I'm wrestling him tonight. And she's like, oh, okay.
It's cool. It's fine, honey.
I'm like, you're lucky you didn't see me walk by Sarian. Every time I walk by him before anything at 3-2-1 at Evolve, he always flips me off. I'm sure my wife would be like, why did he flip you off?
Get him, honey.
No, we're friends. It's cool.
Yeah.
It's all fine. So, the Bruiser Brody wheels are continuing to spin because we have a big show. Big show on May 6th.
So it is May 6th? Oh, right. You're right.
That's
May
6th. Save the 7.
That's Save the 7, Studio 7 benefit with... As he
gosh,
goes,
oh, we got so many bands. I know Wide Only and the Wreckage are going to be a part of it. Windowpane, of course. Almost Human. Thou Shalt Wilt. Cool band.
What Thou Wilt. Casualty of God.
I'm like, really cool band that I just Thou screwed up their wilt? Name. I'm so sorry. What Thou Wilt.
Thou Shalt Wilt is like the hatred of flowers, man.
I don't know why.
Thou Shalt Wilt.
It's just, it's the Christian side of me.
Yeah, that's right.
Wilt thou shall.
So yeah, Almost Human is the Kiss tribute, the Aussie tribute, which is going to be killer. I'm sitting in with them. Tony's sitting in with them. Travis is sitting in with them.
Damn.
Yeah, just going to be doing a bunch of cool Aussie stuff. Bruiser Brody, Superfecto, What Thou Wilt, Casualty of God, Phil Kennedy and Ben Axman. Yeah, and then, of course, the Levi Lion Party Bus is going to be there, shuttling people
Lion
up and down.
Lion Pride,
Horton.
Baby.
Dude, Levi Lion Pride, thanks so much. That's one of the cooler things that's going on that day.
And that's Lyon.
That's right. That's right.
Just want to make sure people know
that. The Party Bus is literally the Party Bus because there's still no alcohol at 7, which is part of why we're trying to raise money for them.
Yep.
They're going to be shuttling people up and down Horton, the alley, to the Siren. So you can drink like a fish and then just hop back on the bus and get right back over to the venue.
And what a fun way to do it.
Dude, right?
Drink, jump on the bus, do whatever you want on the bus.
Yep.
Get off the bus, get back in the club, and then do it again during a...
Pretty epic.
During a set change or during a band that maybe you're like, oh, I've seen these guys enough. I could go get a drink right now.
Well, and all the bands are doing half-hour sets, so that's why I figured I'd make the bus run every 20 minutes.
Perfect.
So there'll be an overlap.
Yep.
So even if you leave halfway through one band's performance, you'll get back halfway through the next.
And if the weather keeps being the way that the weather's being, I mean, you won't even need the bus. You can just walk it.
Yeah, it's only a couple hundred yards. And they do have an outdoor patio there, which is part of the reason I wanted to do it there as well. They have a huge outdoor patio.
Are they prepared for us?
I've let them know that they need to have some extra staff on.
Just in case.
Yeah, I've told them, like, look, we're going to be...
Because Sundays, you know.
We're making you money. We're going to be shuttling people
to you.
To you.
Yeah.
We're going to be shuttling people here to drink.
Yep.
So definitely have some extra staff on. They were like, okay, thanks for the heads up. I'm like, this is not a joke. This is happening.
I know. We've done that before with holiday hangover balls and other things with KSW. I remember one time, like one club, and we're just like, hey, just to let you know, our audience, it's going to be a sold out show and they like to drink. Oh, yeah, we're prepared. Midway through the show, we're at a Jägermeister.
We're prepared.
Yeah, like I told you.
I don't know if they'll bring in additional booze. I just want to make sure they had additional staff.
Yeah, yeah.
So that people weren't like, yeah, man, I was an hour and a half at the Siren to get a Coors Light. You know?
Right.
So I'm going to tell them, like, staff up, because we're going to be running a shuttle bus over here.
We're coming for your alcohol.
It's weird. Yeah, it's going to be busy. So, American Music is supplying the backline for the whole
thing.
Awesome. So the drums, the amps, everything's coming from American Music. Actually, I need to dig into, now that this most recent Brody show is behind us, I need to dig into getting the promotional full scream ahead on Save the 7. But I think the event's already doing well. I know a lot of the artists involved have been sharing the poster image.
Very cool.
Pushing the event page. So
yeah, now that our last show's over, we can all focus on that as well, which is good. I imagine we'll be more sober than the last show.
It will be.
Yeah.
It will be. I was telling Steve this morning, everyone, I'm on the wagon, I think, for a little while. Yeah. I don't know for how long. I'm not saying I'm never going to drink again or anything like that. I just, okay. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes you hit a wall and then you hit a wall and go, man,
I need a break.
Well, I need a lot of, I got some stuff I need to work out apparently. Because if the booze unleashed the Kraken on that degree, it's like, oh, I got some goblins in there. I need to sort out and make sure I'm good before I pour my skull all full of booze. And
that's a good point.
So yeah, I'm going to work on me if that makes sense, but I'm doing fine. I'm in a great mood.
You look great.
I need to work on me a little bit. There's some stuff I need to sort out and deal with and make sure I'm at peace with. And once I've done that, maybe I'll have a nice Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Yes. We'll drink to that.
Yeah, dude.
It was funny, like, at the Showbox. Obviously, you know, when we do our shows at 3-2-1 Battle at Evolve Fitness, the drinks are a lot cheaper. You get, like, a can of Rainier for, like, $3.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, like, it's funny talking to some, like, hardcore 3-2-1 fans that's their social thing. That's when they go out, and that's when they go out drinking. They're like,
I spent $90 at the bar.
I just spent $25 for this one drink.
Yeah.
I'm like, what do you mean? It's like, it's a double. I'm like, wow.
Yeah,
but that's just how it is.
When the show boxes were bought out by AEG, the food and beverage was bought out by Wolfgang Puck.
Oh.
So, yeah, I know this because I'm like that dude from The Matrix. I know because it's my job to know. Ergo, the drinks are very expensive.
No wonder why the food smells so good.
Facilitating though. The need of the one.
The food always smells good there.
Yeah, Wolfgang Puck runs food and beverage.
I need to start getting food there.
Yeah, it used to be Showbox. Like, everything you did was through the Showbox.
Yeah.
A Showbox Market, and then they bought out what was the Premier Club, and then Phoenix 3, and that became Showbox Soto. But yeah, then within a year or so, they cut that deal. AEG is a big corporation down in California.
Yeah.
So a lot of times I'll get contracts and stuff and fire safety stuff. I have to get a look over and sign from an office down in L.A. But yeah, Wolfgang Puck's Food and Beverage, and that is why your can of icy cold Ranier is probably like $7.50.
Yeah. Thanks, Wolfgang.
Yeah, dude. Straight
you greedy
up.
Greedy son of a bitch.
Yeah, that's the deal, man.
But hey, thanks for everyone who came out to Everett for a Bruce Bernie show. That was a blast. Sorry if I walked away from you. You just made things weird.
Sorry if I almost fell off the stage at you. I was trying to make things weird.
It was a weird night, but we had a blast. It was a really good time.
We were all imploding / exploding, and you got to watch it.
And I feel like people were doing that with us.
Yeah.
But this is a good thing.
Well, if you wanted to see a genuine rock and roll show by people that are losing their minds and really, you know, really mean it.
Yeah.
Like, wow, that band really meant it. These guys, we couldn't have meant it more. We were all losing our minds, dealing with our stress, our pain, our anger, our sense of humor.
Yep.
Everything came out right there, unfiltered, and I'm sure as Steve hopes, I'm sure as Travis, Jeff, and JT hope that you guys enjoyed it.
I feel like they did. I mean, we are the world's most dangerous band now that Paul Schaefer's done.
That's right.
That's when you start taking that. I love that. Jim's review is the best.
I've never felt more in danger from a band on stage. Like, oh, dude. We don't want to hurt you. We just want to entertain the hell out of you. Maybe hurt ourselves a little bit. I did step on Travis's head.
Anything else going on in the world of Glenn?
No, man. Not much. Looking forward to some cool things going on with Windowpane. A lot to talk about there. But for now, you can catch Windowpane alongside so many other great bands at Studio 7 on the 6th, and then more news to follow.
Awesome.
That's what's up, brother.
Also, I got to remember, throw it out there, our friend Red the Stripper, reached out to me, wants to come back and say hi. And
I'd like to see her.
Yeah, so she's going to be coming. I don't know if it's next week or the week after. She says she has one of her stripper friends that also wants to come hang out. So,
sounds terrible.
I was like, I don't know. I mean, all right, fine. So that will happen sometime in the near future. We'll have the return of Red. I don't know if it's next week or the week after that, but trust me.
I need a Red hug.
Yeah.
It's been too long.
I agree. She's a good person.
Yeah.
It'd be nice to have her back in these studios. So that will happen sometime in the near future. Rev hopefully is having a great time at the Avengers movie.
Oh, and if you left a voicemail, a phone call, or text message,
we failed you.
Please continue to do so. We just got wrapped up in talking. It was like Steve and I hanging out chatting.
This is basically what Glenn and I do when we're just hanging out together.
Right. I hope you guys enjoyed the show today.
I hope so, too. You can email us at themixcast@gmail.com, 253-271-4787. That's our voicemail or text message line. Or follow us on Twitter at themixcast. And we'll be back next Tuesday.
Stay positive.
Ah. The Recap Show is an inside look for fans into the world of global soccer, women's sports, and all things gal culture.
From the inside perspective of two World Cup champions and Olympians.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.